Get road trip ready with a service checkup at your local Chevy dealer. They can save you time and money and get the job done right the first time, worry-free. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for current service specials or to schedule a test drive.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
Thank you, Steve Bertram. By the way, lots of texts. You can always text to 312-981-7200. I'll just run through a couple of them real quick here. We have on the line Stephen Collinson, who writes for CNN and is going to preview for us what could be a really boring and uneventful 9 days in America as the president leaves, or it could just be more hijinks galore. There's just no telling. My personal guess is that as much trouble as Donald Trump has managing domestic affairs, that being in the presence of a Saudi king or European leaders is just going to be that much more complicated. I hope that he doesn't tweet to anybody. That's what Madeleine Albright said. But who knows? In fact, we were talking about the where was the king? Where the, was flying? The flying king of Holland or someplace, Steve? Does Holland have a king? This is why it's a good thing I'm not doing an international tour. The Hague, Netherlands. Some Dutch passengers on KLM flights might have recognized the co-pilot's voice. King Willem Alexander has been flying for 21 years. Can you imagine what it would be like if Donald Trump or Barack Obama were flying your 737 because they wanted to be a pilot?
Oh, yeah. So it was a Denmark? Or
yeah. Yeah. Well, is Norway? Denmark the same as the Netherlands?
No, it's the Netherlands. I'm sorry. I didn't hear you.
See, I'm not real good on which of those are which.
No, that's not.
Those are different
Holland.
Places?
That's Holland.
This is why I shouldn't be president.
Right.
John, our president couldn't keep his fingers off Twitter long enough to fly the plane. The plane would be going into a nosedive because of distracted flying. John, I would also love to get, well, I don't have time for all of these here.
Can I give you one more?
Yeah.
The New York Times now, is what has become a daily thing, the president just left. The New York Times out with a story. I'll just read it for you. President Trump told Russian officials in the Oval Office this month that firing the FBI director, James Comey, had relieved, quote, unquote, great pressure on him. That's according to a document summarizing the meeting. Quote, I just fired the head of the FBI. He was crazy, a real nut job. I faced great pressure because of Russia. That's taken off, end quote.
To whom did the president evidently say that?
Well, it looked like it would be Lavrov and Kislyak, the ambassador. It says to Russian officials.
I'm sorry, Stephen, who is saying that the president said that?
This is being reported by the FBI, and they are citing a document summarizing the meeting.
Well, I wonder whose document that would be. Presumably not the Russians.
I would be surprised if it was.
I mean, there would be no validity there. I wouldn't trot that out.
No, right.
No kidding. Wow. And I can imagine what he means by that. It's just a personal pressure not to have to deal with. I wasn't trying to compromise the investigation, but you can't go there. You can't say that. You can't do that. Stephen, don't you suppose it's good news for the president personally that he's no longer going to have to deal with this on a daily basis, that he can put his focus on the international scene?
Yeah, but I think this story is proof that this terrible week that the president has had with all these issues about Russia, the naming of a special counsel is going to follow him around the world to Saudi Arabia and Israel and Italy and Belgium, the NATO summit. Every time he gets before a camera and a journalist, he's going to be asked about this. And I think it's something that foreign leaders are going to clearly be very interested in as they, size up Donald Trump. This is his first step on the international stage. This is a president that doesn't have any diplomatic experience. Most new presidents start off, you know, they get their feet wet as a global leader on a trip somewhere fairly easy, like Canada or Mexico. But this president has scheduled a hugely ambitious trip. And the fact that we're going to get these stories, they seem to be, as you said, breaking every afternoon. We get some kind of bombshell.
Can I give you one?
The people in the White House are exhausted by this, and now they're going to have to manage it half a world away.
If I can give you one more, and it's interesting, these two stories came from the Post and New York Times are kind of warring with each other. Just as the president left the country, Washington Post saying this afternoon that the investigation into possible coordination with Russia and Trump has identified a current White House official as a quote-unquote significant person of interest.
Who is? If I'm the president, I'm ticked that you even have access to that information, Steve. I mean,
yeah,
Steve.
Well,
I subscribe to the Washington Post.
And so that would be the first indication, if that was confirmed, that this investigation is not just looking at people who are in the campaign. We suspected that people like Michael Flynn, the former National Security Advisor, the former campaign manager, Paul Manafort, were in the crosshairs of this investigation. This would raise it to another level entirely. And the fact that this is happening as well, we're hearing about this in the week where a special counsel was named, I think just underlines how deeply serious this is for the White House. And the fact is we don't know where this is going to go. It's stunning, really, if you think about it, that three and a half months now into a presidency, there's a special counsel. We're getting these bombshell stories every day. This is clearly not normal, and this is clearly a presidency that now is operating and will be, because the Mueller probe, the special counsel, is not going to be wrapped up within a few months, as the president appears to hope. This is going to be with this White House, I would think, for the rest of this year and probably deep into next year. There's a huge cloud over this administration.
I don't think it's a presidency. A presidency would be sort of what the president oversees, you know, the actions and the progress that you make. That's your presidency. This has been just a group of people on defense since they lied about the size of the crowd at the inauguration. They haven't been able to accomplish anything except sign some proclamations here and there. The House passed health care reform, but that's far from being law. They have not done anything. Maybe it's just as well, but I don't know that that's true. But to call this a presidency is almost a disservice to all of the other people who've held the office.
That's very true. And I think one of the things we're seeing here, perhaps with the president's interaction with James Comey and in many other areas, is perhaps, clearly his very experience. It doesn't seem that in some cases, the president and the people around him actually understand the job of the presidency and the decorum that's required. For instance, that it's not appropriate for a president to try and have a relationship with the head of the FBI at a time when the FBI is investigating people around him. And I think you've seen a very sharp learning curve there. And this is something that we're going to be watching over the next week when the president is representing the United States around the world. People still look to the president of the United States, whoever it is, for leadership. He's the most powerful man in the world. And it's going to be very interesting to see how Donald Trump fits into that role, how he adapts to it, whether he's able to sort of carry it off. We've already heard stories, for example, from Europe about how the organizers of the NATO summit next week have decided to sort of change around their program to sort of get rid of the long speeches because they don't believe that the president either wants that or will be able to hold his attention on something like that, intricate, boring speeches by foreign leaders for hour after hour. So this really is about how the president fits into his role as a global leader over the next few weeks. If it mirrors what we've seen in the way he's done so domestically, it could be a fairly rocky few weeks.
Well, I travel every now and then to Europe. My friend Steve Bertrand does here too. Anybody who ever has knows how physically demanding that could be. If I were in my 70s and had to fly to, five cities in 9 days and have, like you said, long, boring meetings and formal dinners, I would be a wreck. I would not be very functional. And then to imagine that this really isn't my game anyway. And then to imagine that the whole world is waiting for a misstep. I'm worried that it is too ambitious a trip for even a seasoned diplomat, let alone this novice that we've got.
And that's a very good point. I've been on many of these foreign trips with presidents around the world, and they are absolutely exhausting. You get on Air Force One, you fly halfway across the world, you land, you go through a welcoming ceremony, the president then goes into endless meetings, usually there's sort of a late dinner, and then the next day it starts all over again, and then possibly at the end of the next day you've got another long flight. There's just this steady accumulation of fatigue and jet lag, high-pressure talks, high-pressure public appearances. And as you say, even a seasoned president would find this very tiring. And the other thing is that the president is traveling with his entire domestic staff in the White House with him, with the exception of Kellyanne Conway, who White House sources isn't traveling this week. So we've seen how brittle the mood is in the White House. People in the West Wing are absolutely exhausted. They're dispirited after, you know, really, really tough political weeks, week after week, and it's been getting even worse over the last week. They're going to be thrown together on Air Force One for hours and hours. They're not going to be getting any sleep. They're going to be under intense pressure. So you can see how the fractious nature of this administration is going to be tested, let alone how the president is going to react. His staff are in for a marathon as well. And this is 9 days. You know, the president is going to be talking about Middle East peace. He's going to be talking about Iran's influence in the region. He's going to a NATO summit. He's going to a G7 summit. These are the biggest issues in the world. And, you know, if he didn't have any domestic problems and if he was an experienced diplomat or senator or lawmaker, it would still be, you know, a huge test for a new president. The fact that Donald Trump has all these other, you know, complications, I don't think it's possible to underestimate how difficult and how much of a challenge this is for the president.
Stephen Collinson's on a phone line from CNN. You wrote in your piece today, the most striking moment of Trump's visit to the kingdom, Saudi Arabia, will be his speech about Islam, given his critical campaign rhetoric and attempt to impose a temporary entry ban on residents of a number of Muslim nations soon after taking office. And then you wrote this, it's a quote, he will develop a strong, respectful message that the United States and the entire civilized world expects our Muslim allies to take a strong stand against radical Islamic ideology, an ideology that uses a perverted interpretation of religion to justify crimes against humanity. That's H.R. McMaster. But you point out he has to be very careful how he lectures the Muslim world, doesn't he?
Yes, that's right. And, you know, Donald Trump is going into this with, you know, a reputation as someone that's been very critical of Islam, some of the campaign rhetoric that you'll remember, the Muslim ban, the ban on residents of six Muslim countries that he tried to enforce that you mentioned there. So people are going to be watching this very carefully. Now, a lot of Donald Trump supporters and some people in the foreign policy community would say that in the past, U.S. presidents haven't been as blunt as necessary in addressing the Muslim world and Muslim leaders to try and get them to do more to crack down on radical extreme Islam. I think it's going to be very interesting to see if the president uses the words radical Islamic terrorism, words that the Obama administration shied away from because they didn't want to.
What's your guess on that, Stephen? What's your guess on that?
I think he will, frankly. I mean, he's been happy to talk about it in public in the United States. He overruled his national security advisor, H.R. McMaster, when it was suggested to him that he wouldn't, that he shouldn't use that language. The speech is being written by the way, by Stephen Miller, the White House policy advisor, who was the principal author of the travel ban. And like President Trump, has a history of fairly sort of robust rhetoric about Islam. I think it's going to be very interesting, though, to see how this is sort of received in the Muslim world. I think if you look at the Saudis, U.S. allies elsewhere in the sort of Sunni Muslim world, I think they're quite happy right now to give the president a pass on what he said in the past. Saudis, for example, much prefer the policies towards Iran of the Trump administration than they did the Obama administration's policies.
That's an interesting point.
In Yemen.
I'm glad you mentioned that because not everybody in the world thought Barack Obama did a bang-up job, and Donald Trump actually might be more warmly received than, say, the previous president would in a couple of these places. I want you to just talk briefly about that, and then let's just quickly skip to Israel and Europe as we sort of preview the president's trip. Stephen Collinson's on a phone line from CNN. My number's 312-981-7200. 227, just another minute with Stephen Collinson from CNN. We're talking about the president's trip and previewing it a little bit. And while we talked about maybe what he needs to be aware of in Saudi Arabia, like Israel is going to be any easier, right, Stephen? That's a lot of minefields there. You've got to be careful what you say and how you step, right?
Completely. And you would have thought that this would be a bit of a breather for the president, given the fact that Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli prime minister, has been a strong supporter of President Trump. But this week there's been several signs of tension, not least the fact that it now appears that the president will not say that he's going to move the U.S. embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, as he promised to do on the campaign trail, because he doesn't want to harm the prospects for peace between Israel and the Palestinians. Clearly, if he were to move that embassy, that would not just anger the Palestinians, which see Jerusalem as their future capital, but all of the Arab allies on which the president is trying to court on this trip. So
right.
The Israeli trip is not going to be the sort of easy ride that we expected.
Well, he said he was going to move the embassy, right? Wasn't that a campaign pledge?
It certainly was, and other presidents have made that pledge. But they find out that the complications of doing that once they become president make it something that, you know, they decide in the end that they're not going to do. The president has said that he would do that. People in the White House are now saying that, okay, it doesn't mean we're never going to do it. We're just not going to do it on this trip. It seems that the president sees some opening to push Israeli-Palestinian peace talks, though it's very difficult to see that the political conditions are in place either in the West Bank and Gaza or in Israel for either side to make the kind of concessions that would be needed to push this forward. But it looks like the president and his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, who's in charge of this portfolio for the White House, want to give it a try.
One last question. Dave, you're on WGN. What did you want to say or ask? Hi.
Yeah, I don't know if it's possible or not, but I heard somewhere that Trump wanted to be the first president to visit Mecca. I don't think that's possible, but I thought that'd be kind of stupid.
Did you hear that, Stephen?
Yes. No, the president doesn't have any plans to do that. Generally, Western non-Muslim people don't go to visit Mecca. He'll be in Riyadh. He'll be visiting King Salman. He'll be going to the Royal Palace. He'll be meeting a bunch of leaders of Muslim majority nations, and they'll be discussing how to sort of increase their cooperation to take on the regional threat from Iran. This is a reorientation of policy in the Trump administration. In the Obama administration, they tried to be a little bit more sort of counterbalancing between Iran and traditional U.S. allies like Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
The Trump administration has reverted to the more traditional posture on this.
At least at the end, open arms is the Pope. You know, I can just see him collapsing in there going, oh, Pope, I'm exhausted. Help me out here. Could you give me a blessing or something? You know, this is just killing me, Mr. Pope.
Right. Well, you'll remember even this is how incredible it is. Even a meeting between the American president and a pope is not going to be that simple. You'll remember there was a bit of a Twitter spat between President Trump and the pope during the campaign.
Yeah.
So even that meeting, which would normally just be something that's very formal and very friendly, has, you know, some kind of tension as we approach it. It just shows how many conventions this president has flouted, not just domestically, but internationally in the first few months of his presidency.
Nice to talk to you, Stephen. We can read you online. Stephen Collinson's piece, Besieged at Home, Trump Sets Off for Do-or-Die Foreign Trip, is available at CNN.com today. Thanks for your time, Stephen.
Sure, anytime.